Football Weekly is on the air.
Brady looks down the middle. Pass is tipped, and it is intercepted. Picked off by Flores at the 22. Ducks to the left at the 10, at the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Brady Flores, touchdown!
Tips left, one receiver right. Newton fades back to throw. Newton fires over the middle. It's caught. It is caught at the 10, the 5. Touchdown! Greg Olsen!
Second down and 5 at the 19, Ben under center. Pinches Wallace from the left. Play action fake. He's back with time. He looks. He throws it long down the field for a shrinking Wallace. He's got it at the 20. 25-20. 15-10. And he strikes into the end zone for the Pittsburgh Steelers touchdown. 81 yards. Ben, the bomb to Wallace.
This is Wayne Larrivee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, we find out if the Lions are for real and are the Texans playoff caliber.
What is the future of the quarterback situation in Buffalo? Does Matt Forte get a deal done with the Bears? And is Donovan McNabb the future in Minnesota?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrivee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. And we start out with associate editor Kevin Fishbane. Miami Dolphins at 0-3. Coach Sparano's job? Well, let me ask you this, Kevin, straight out. How hot is the seat he's sitting on?
Well, he's certainly a likely candidate to lose his job in season. I mean, this is a big game heading to San Diego, because if they lose the Chargers badly, there's a bye in week 5, which would, you know, in these situations, I know it's early in the season, that's the kind of, getting that bye week to bring in an interim coach could be the option. But the problem that Stephen Ross has is the likely interim candidate, Mike Nolan. His defense is one of the big reasons the Dolphins are 0-3 to begin with.
Well, you have to ask the question, Kevin, and I know it's always the hardest for the owner and the GM to do self-evaluation, but how much of this is Jeff Ireland's fault in terms of a talent deficit? How much of it is the silliness that Stephen Ross, the owner, showed over the last 12 to 18 months, and how much of it is actually Sparano's coaching?
Yeah, and I think, Hub, if you ask people around the league, you know, Tony Sparano is a very well-respected coach around the league, and I don't think Stephen Ross certainly doesn't have that kind of respect as an owner, as we saw this past winter. And to come in with your head coach knowing he's not the owner's first choice, your quarterback knowing that he's not the organization's first choice, but they are pressed to try to lead the team to the playoffs in a very good division. I mean, everything is pretty much going against Sparano to begin with, and to start 0-3, just adding salt to his wounds. And you know, Ireland bringing in these former Cowboys, they haven't gotten the offensive line fixed at all, and the offense, you know, still having struggles in the red zone. It's just all been tumbling down. And again, they have to play the Chargers this weekend, which really doesn't help their cause.
You know, when you look at the Buffalo Bills, one of the surprise teams in the league at 3-0, what's the story there, and where are they at with their quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, in terms of his future?
Well, they certainly want to lock him up, and they want him to be their quarterback. I mean, he's not Jim Kelly, but he works great in Chan Gailey's system. We've seen that so far this season. The two sides we hear are still apart on money, and we don't really know if Ryan Fitzpatrick would get that kind of money anywhere else around the league. He just works so well in that spread offense with Chan Gailey. They're on the same wavelength. And then after Fitzpatrick, they got to look at Stevie Johnson, their star receiver. And Fred Jackson still is being vocal that he wants a new deal. His deal runs out after 2012, and he still wants to be paid more.
Well, and let me take you back to Fitzpatrick for a minute, Kevin, because according to our sources, they are at least $3 million a year apart on a new deal. We don't know how much that hurts the guaranteed money. We also know that they're very interested in what's going to be a very good quarterback class of 2012 in the NFL draft, so it might be fair to say they'd like Fitzpatrick to be their quarterback of the future, but the organization is not necessarily married to the idea right now yet anyway.
No, and especially seeing what Fitz has done with Gailey's offense, they probably think they can bring in a Landry Jones, a Matt Barkley, somebody in next year's draft class, and maybe would be able to have similar success considering the weapons they have there. The O-line's playing much better. You know, Fitz is a smart guy. Everybody talks about how he's gone to Harvard. You got to imagine at some point he's going to realize this is his best opportunity to not only make the most money, but to be most successful because he works so well in that system.
You know, Wayne, the great thing about that report is up until 3 weeks ago, it would have been Kevin saying they can bring in Andrew Luck, but apparently they're out of that derby now.
That's right.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Appreciate it. Executive editor Dan Arkish is with us. Another coach whose job may be on the line, Steve Spagnuolo, the 0-3 Rams. What's the story there?
Well, you know, Wayne, I don't think he's in any immediate danger, but people have certainly started, you know, asking about his status after a loss to the Ravens. That was just an absolute rout. It was a devastating setback, and with the schedule that they have staring them in the face, we could be looking at a steadily sinking ship there. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong.
And, you know, you look at Spags, he makes no bones about being an offensive coach, brings in Josh McDaniels, and in fairness to McDaniels, his system is complicated. He's got a young quarterback in Bradford. They weren't going to get it right away, and they still have a talent deficit at wide receiver. But it's the defense in St. Louis that has been so disappointing, and that is Spags' specialty.
Yeah, I would say aside from middle linebacker James Laurinaitis, who's a really good player, and the new safety Quentin McKell from the Eagles, and Chris Long and the rookie Robert Quinn off the edges, nobody else is playing well on defense, and the secondary in particular is a shambles right now.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. We'll talk to you again next week. Stay tuned. We've got more news and notes from around the NFL the way we hear it when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And we welcome in from that staff, Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. Down in Tennessee, they've now got to replace Kenny Britt, their outstanding wide receiver, and that's going to be no easy task after Britt went down for the season with an injury last week against the Broncos.
Yeah, that's right. Britt was just on fire out of the gate, obviously developing quite the rapport with Matt Hasselbeck early in the season, and Hasselbeck won't shy away from the fact that it's going to be, you know, very difficult. You don't really replace a guy like Kenny Britt. You just got to sort of find the next guy up and do the best you can. So there's going to be a couple. They went out and signed Donnie Avery, and he may eventually work his way into the offense, but it's going to certainly take time. So in the meantime, it's going to be up to Damian Williams and Lavelle Hawkins, a pair of unproven guys who are going to have to pick up the slack. This offense is going to change completely, but it's what they have to work with right now.
Well, and Arthur, two-part question about Mike Munchak, head coach and offensive line guru. First, and I don't mean to be cruel here, but Kenny Britt deserves this. How do they keep him out of jail? I mean, the kid has had nothing but trouble, and now this is going to be a long rehab period, and they've got to be worried about it. That's number one on Munchak's list. And number two, they got to get Chris Johnson going. And one of the reasons that Johnson hasn't done much is the run blocking with one of the best offensive lines of football hasn't been very good. Is it possible that Munchak, distracted from being the offensive line coach, being the head coach, has hurt that unit?
Well, it's certainly an interesting point, and he, you know, they're not hiding their frustration, starting with Johnson. He says he can only do, you know, without sort of throwing guys under the bus or anything like that, he's saying that he can only do so much with what he's had to work with. So whether Munchak's been distracted or not, it's a great question. I don't have the answer. He obviously brought in not only another Hall of Famer, but his best friend in Bruce Matthews to get that unit going. And what's really interesting is that they were great in the preseason with a rookie Jamie Harper just looking awesome, and there was plenty of holes to be found, but it just hasn't worked that way. The pass blocking's been good. The run blocking has not been good. Getting back to your Kenny Britt question, anyone who tells you they're not concerned about what he's going to be doing with this time now is telling you a lie, because he's a guy who has obviously had not only his share of difficulties staying out of trouble, but he's not a real detail-oriented guy. He's a guy that needs a little pushing, needs a little prodding to stay focused. So the good news is that he's staying in Nashville for that rehab as opposed to going back to New Jersey, where a lot of his troubles have come. But there's definitely some concern there.
Arthur, thank you very much. Appreciate that story on Kenny Britt and the Tennessee Titans. Associate Editor Dan Parr is with us. Matt Forte, his contract situation is a simmering issue in Chicago. What can you tell us, Dan?
Well, Wayne, from talking to Disa Bakari, who is Matt Forte's agent, and then also getting a statement from Jerry Angelo, Bakari describes it as a philosophical crossroads. They view Matt Forte's value differently than the Bears do. They're looking at other running backs and the contracts they have, and looking at some of the numbers that Matt Forte has put up. He ranks very high up there on the list of total yards for running back since he entered the league. Only some elite guys ahead of him. But the Bears, I don't think, despite all that, feel that he is an elite running back that should be paid on the same level. So there's not a lot of progress being made as far as we can tell right now, and the Bears will have the option of using the franchise tag on Matt Forte. He's in the final year of his deal, and they'd be able to, you know, use that as a mechanism to keep him in place if they can't come to an agreement.
It'll be interesting, though, Dan, because when you look at these new deals that just got done, Adrian Peterson, Chris Johnson, Frank Gore, D'Angelo Williams, they skewed that franchise price pretty good, and I think the Bears are going to be reluctant to even pay him that much next year if it was $9 or $10 million in 1 year. And there's a really ominous quote that you got directly from Matt Forte. I'm reading it off your notes, and you just said it, but he said, quote, obviously somebody doesn't believe I'm an elite running back. Now, this has been simmering for a while. He's a very mild-mannered kid. I don't think he wants trouble, but it sounds to me like he is going to want out of Chicago if he doesn't get paid this year.
I can tell you that that's not the case. That's not what he's thinking about right now. He does want to be a Chicago Bear. That's his approach right now. He thinks he's going to be there, thinks something's going to get done. While he's unhappy he doesn't have his deal now, he still believes Jerry Angelo's intent is to get an extension done that will make him happy. But it could come to that point. There's no doubt about it. If we get to off season and the franchise tag is on Matt Forte, I think they will get ugly at that point. Matt Forte, like you said, is a soft-spoken, mild-mannered, true professional in every sense of the word, but he really strongly considered holding out of training camp this year. Next year will be an option for him again, and he may be more likely to use other strategies at that point.
Thank you very much, Dan. Senior editor Eric Edholm with us as well. Minnesota Vikings' Les Frazier's made it clear he has no plans to replace the struggling quarterback, Donovan McNabb. What can you tell us?
Well, I can tell you there's a little bit of tension right now because obviously the fans want some kind of change after an 0-3 start and three blown leads, double-digit blown leads. So, you know, the easiest fix is just change the quarterback, and Les Frazier says, no, we're not going to do that. But he just threw in a little piece, a nugget the other day that was really interesting. He said, we've got some mechanical things that we think Donovan has to work on. And there's got to be a reason why he's short-hopping some of these throws. And, you know, when the media went up to McNabb and said, well, do you think you have these mechanical issues? He flatly said no. He doesn't believe there's anything wrong with the way he's throwing the football right now.
He'd probably like a few more weapons to throw to, though.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, with Percy Harvin's getting, what, you know, I mean, half or two-thirds of the snaps, depending on the game, and the tight ends haven't been very productive, and Michael Jenkins is what he is, and, you know, Bernard Berrien's been invisible. So there's not a lot to throw to right now.
All right, thank you very much, Eric. Stay tuned. We've got the games coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. It's week four in the NFL this weekend, so we're getting a little closer to seeing who has what in the NFL. The New Orleans Saints have won two in a row, including a 40-33 come-from-behind victory over the Houston Texans last week. This week they're in Jacksonville to take on a Jaguar team off to an expected 1-2 start. Now, what this game comes down to is very simple. Can the Jaguars, with rookie quarterback Blaine Gabbert, keep up with the high-powered New Orleans attack, piloted by veteran, former Super Bowl MVP Drew Brees? The Jags didn't get much pressure on the quarterback last week at a 16-10 loss at Carolina. They may be without defensive lineman Matt Roth due to a neck injury and defensive end Aaron Kampman, who's been struggling through a knee problem. Brees is good against pressure, so think how well he'll do without pressure in his face in a veritable 7-on-7 drill. Saints averaging 25 more points per game than the Jaguars thus far this season. Enough said there. Something has to give or someone has to win as the 0-3 Vikings visit the 0-3 Chiefs this weekend. While the Chiefs, who were blown away by Buffalo at home and at Detroit, hung tough on the road with the Chargers in San Diego last week, falling 20-17, there doesn't appear to be much hope in Kansas City at this point. They haven't had a lead in a game this season. Meanwhile, hey, Minnesota's had plenty of leads. They've relinquished substantial second-half leads in two of their three losses, including a 20-0 advantage at halftime over the Lions. Even in the opener at San Diego, the Vikings had a 10-point lead in the first half of that ballgame. Like I said, something has to give in Arrowhead Stadium this Sunday.
We in the Carolina Panthers visit the Chicago Bears in a game that's a little more interesting than some people realize. Remember, off the 2006 Super Bowl season with the top defense in the NFL, Lovie Smith fired defensive coordinator Ron Rivera. Now, both guys, Ron and Lovie, are too classy to hold grudges. It's not that there's ill will there, but you can't think either one is forgotten either. Ron Rivera would love to come into Chicago, where he played his entire NFL career, and get his second win as a head coach. And Lovie Smith, I think, is going to want to send a message. If you look at Cam Newton, the quarterback of the first six quarters of the season is a very different guy from the last six quarters of the season, and this is his most difficult test. In Chicago, with the other team's head coach looking to make a statement with his defense, and on the other side of the ball, the Carolina Panthers, without their two best defensive players at this point in John Beeson and Thomas Davis. So this is a really tough putt for the Panthers, and a chance for the Bears to try and get that offense untracked a little bit, where they have really struggled. That's where Ron Rivera's test is. He's a former defensive coordinator, so I think it'll be a fascinating football game to watch. In the end, you have to assume the Bears have too much for the Panthers. Another really interesting matchup is the San Francisco 49ers, 2-1, and atop the NFC West going into Philadelphia. where the dream team is 1-2 and the only team in the NFC East without two wins. Now, Michael Vick is going to go. We can say that with some certainty. But the reality is Mike Vick's not the offense in Philadelphia right now. LeSean Shady McCoy is. He had a career-high 24 carries last week for 128 yards. He's leading the NFC in rushing, and that's where the focus of the Eagles' offense is. The 49ers can't get anything done on offense. They're dead last, but the Eagles' defense has been suspect, particularly against the run. So this is going to be kind of a classic strength against strength, weakness against weakness, and we shall see which team emerges.
We'll have the 2-1 Redskins coming in off a Monday night loss at Dallas to the Cowboys are on a short work week as they head to St. Louis to face the 0-3 Rams. Now, the Rams' secondary is beat up, and Joe Flacco took advantage of it early and often in the Ravens' 37-7 victory last week. The Rams desperately need to get a ground game going behind Steven Jackson and Cadillac Williams if they're to have any shot. They also have to clean up the penalties, and they've been flagged 24 times in three games this early season, and they're not good enough to overcome that. There is hope, however. The Redskins are 1-5 in their last six games following Monday Nighters. The lone undefeateds in the AFC, the 3-0 Buffalo Bills, coming off an emotional come-from-behind victory over the New England Patriots, head to Cincinnati this week where the 1-2 Bengals await. Now, everyone's wondering about the Lions and their 3-0 start, but I'll tell you something. Buffalo has been just as impressive behind Ryan Fitzpatrick. They're getting strong production out of their receiving core, and running back Fred Jackson's on pace for a 2,229 combined rushing receiving yard season. Say what you will about bubbles bursting, but Hub, it is a fact. 4-0 teams go to the playoffs 85% of the time. Now, the Bills haven't been to the playoffs in 11 seasons. That's tied with the Lions for longest playoff drought in the league currently.
When a matchup of two defending division champs in Seattle this week where the Atlanta Falcons come calling. Both teams 1-2, though. Now, the Falcons not nearly as weak in their 1-2 as you look at Seattle, who have actually barely struggled to get by the Cardinals and lost to a couple shaky teams. The Falcons, at least they can say, hey, we got knocked off in Tampa, we got knocked off in Chicago. Their third road game in 4 weeks, not nearly as good on the road as they are at home. But here against Seattle, they're going to look to get healthy against a defense that doesn't really impress you all that much. What's interesting is the Falcons have struggled to protect Matt Ryan. Offensive line was supposed to be his strength, but they let Harvey Dahl get away in free agency. They haven't filled that guard spot very well, and Sam Baker is struggling at left tackle. For the Seattle Seahawks, they got to find some offense. Sidney Rice caught 9 balls last week, but Tarvaris Jackson has really struggled at quarterback. He is also taking a beating, the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. When you look at the pass rushes on these two football teams, you got to give the Atlanta Falcons a bit of an edge. Finally, we've got the Miami Dolphins going to San Diego. We talked about it in the way we hear it. Tony Sparano's seat couldn't be much hotter. We know how East Coast teams struggle when they go west. This is one of the furthest trips in the NFL you can make. Chargers, well, they're 2-1. They're in control of the AFC West along with the Raiders, but they always seem to play down to their opposition. Now, will they do that against Miami, or will this be the game where Norv Turner's guys start to make a statement? They lost Bob Sanders, the former defensive MVP, on the IR again this year. They've added Tommy Harris, the former Chicago Bear Pro Bowler, because they're so banged up on the defensive line. But the bottom line is that's probably not what this game is going to come down to. The Dolphins' defense has been disappointing. That was supposed to be their strength. Phillip Rivers and that Charger offense get it going as well as anybody in the league. If the Chargers get the offense in rhythm, this one could be over early.
All right, Hub, stay tuned. We've got the big games coming up next. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrivee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. Couple of surprise 2-1 teams meet on the shores of Lake Erie as the Tennessee Titans visit the Cleveland Browns. Now, Hub, both teams got strong performances from their quarterbacks when they needed it most last week. The Titans with Matt Hasselbeck and coming from behind to beat Denver, and the Browns behind Colt McCoy, who hit Mohamed Massaquah with a touchdown pass to beat Miami. Well, both those quarterbacks, those teams are going the way those guys go.
Well, and there's been a lot of focus, particularly with Cleveland, with Colt McCoy. The question is he going to be the quarterback of the future? And so what's been covered with all that focus is that the defense in Cleveland is really playing pretty well. Their first-round pick, Phil Taylor. Remember, they made the huge trade with Atlanta, and they ended up 27th in the first round, but then traded up to get to 21 to take Taylor. When was the last time a defensive tackle, a rookie, as a matter of fact, was number two on the team in tackles with 18 stops? He's really solidified that defensive front. Got a lot of people in the back seven that you haven't heard of, but they're playing very good football. And Tennessee, with Kenny Britt now down, if they can't get Chris Johnson untracked, this could be a tough spot for him.
The Monday night affair has the Indianapolis Colts visiting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Derek Schultz has that story.
There's an old saying that when it rains, it pours. Well, it certainly has been cloudy and wet for the Colts lately. Reeling from the loss of Peyton Manning and the team's first 0-3 start in 13 years, Indy was dealt some more bad news this week, with defensive captain Gary Brackett and starting safety Melvin Bullitt each being placed on season-ending injured reserve. The shorthanded Colts heading to Tampa for a primetime Monday night meeting with the young and dangerous Buccaneers. The good news for Indy is that they feel that they have some positives to build on following a strong effort and a 23-20 loss to the defending AFC champion Steelers. However, as Dwight Freeney said, there isn't a lot of consolation in losing.
I mean, I think we did some good things. Obviously, it wasn't enough. And we really don't care about, you know, second place prizes, or we played good in a half, three quarters. You know, we didn't play good enough to win.
A lot of eyes will be on the Colts quarterback situation heading into the matchup with the Bucs. Kerry Collins left last week's loss with concussion-like symptoms, and it's unknown as to what his availability will be. Curtis Painter led a game-tying touchdown drive and may get the start on Monday night. In fact, Painter's performance left head coach Jim Caldwell impressed with his young signal caller.
Well, I think after he got going there, obviously, he couldn't. It was a sack fumble. He got hit from behind. But after that, he came back and I think did a nice job. He moved the ball well, made some nice throws, certainly managed the game well, was able to take us down 80 yards and get that thing in the end zone, which is a heck of a drive.
After a disastrous debut in Houston, the Colts appear close to riding the ship. The last 2 weeks, they've largely held talented runners Peyton Hillis and Rashard Mendenhall in check and consistently harassed opposing quarterbacks. They hope to continue that trend against a confident Tampa Bay team with that offense led by rising star Josh Freeman. Colts will be glad to know that there is no rain in the forecast for Monday night's game. With the way this season has started for them, they've certainly had their fair share of inclement weather. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Derek Schultz.
You know, Wayne, I was on the sidelines for Westwood One for that game Sunday night against the Steelers, and I will tell you that, you know, Bullitt and Brackett were already out, and that Colts defense played really well. They can keep them in football games. But when Curtis Painter came in, I know the 80-yard drive was impressive, but prior to that, he just did not look like an NFL quarterback. Now, if he has to go, you hope he's had the whole week to prepare. It'll be interesting to watch. But I think there's a real drop-off from Kerry Collins to Curtis Painter, let alone from Peyton Manning.
All right, the Steelers and Texans, Hub, are both coming off two and one starts, and they meet in Houston Sunday afternoon. Our preview is provided by Jim Colony.
Despite two straight wins, a lot of people still trying to figure out how good the Steelers are. A shutout over Seattle at home, followed by a closer-than-anticipated win at winless Indianapolis. Coach Mike Tomlin thinks that Sunday may give a pretty good indication.
We acknowledge we're playing a very tough opponent in the Houston Texans, a 2-1 football team, coming off a stinging loss to the New Orleans Saints. They're a quality outfit.
And no higher quality than Andre Johnson, whom Tomlin calls arguably the best receiver in the world.
He's a dangerous man.
Yeah, with size and speed, not to mention hands. Johnson off to a good start, averaging 7 catches through 3 games, 2 touchdowns. He may see a lot of Steelers defensive back Ike Taylor, who will be tested this week as a shutdown corner.
I don't know, Andre a beast, man child, whatever you want to call him. Got the stats to prove it. Does it week in and week out. Been to the Pro Bowl a lot of times.
Yeah, but it's not just Johnson. The Texans have a good running game, even without Arian Foster, and Foster expects to return this weekend.
I told myself just to keep working, after cut day. You never know how this league works, and it's just an opportunity for me to continue to get better. Just take it in stride and just see what happens.
Yeah, Ben Tate's been doing a nice job in Foster's place, fifth in the NFL with 301 yards rushing, but just one TD. The Texans hoping Foster's return will help in the red zone. Meanwhile, the Steelers had trouble stopping the run in Indianapolis. Defensive lineman Aaron Smith says that'll have to change against the Texans.
They're a great offense. They run the ball well. They got great weapons. It's a tough challenge for us, especially going down in their place.
Now, as for the Steelers, a lot of people in Pittsburgh are unhappy with their running game, usually one of the best in the league, but so far ranking closer to the bottom. Plus, quarterback Ben Roethlisberger's been under siege behind an injury-riddled offensive line, but Roethlisberger's been there and done that.
We lose linemen around here more than any other team. I don't know why or what it is, but it's hard for those guys to get into a rhythm with each other. But the nice thing is they're not off the street, so they do know each other, even if they're not the 5 starters all the time.
In fact, the backups who may have to start, Trey Essex at tackle, Ramon Foster at guard, both of them have started for the Steelers over the last few seasons. Foster last year when they went to the Super Bowl. In Pittsburgh, I'm Jim Colony for Pro Football Weekly.
All right, thank you, Jim. Everyone talking about this finally being Houston's year to make the postseason. Well, we've been here before. If the Texans are for real, they win this game at home against the defending AFC champs. Analysis of more top games after these messages. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL. The New York Giants coming off an impressive 29-16 victory at Philadelphia on the road once again this weekend in the desert to take on the road weary Cardinals, who are coming off tough losses at Washington and at Seattle. This should be an interesting ballgame. The Cardinals at home are a different kind of team.
Yeah, they really are, although without Beanie Wells, who's been banged up, they've really struggled in the ground game. Remember, they lost their high draft choice at running back, and Hightower is now in Washington, so the ground game is a problem for them. And Kevin Cobb has not exactly emerged as the franchise quarterback. He and Larry Fitzgerald had the one big hookup in Seattle last week, but it wasn't enough to win the football game. You look at the Giants. I just wish we all knew what to say about Eli Manning. I mean, the guy's got a ring. He's obviously a top-level quarterback. He gets more heat than anybody I know, and he is the reason they knocked off the Philadelphia Eagles last week. If he is starting to get hot, maybe this is Eli's year with Peyton on the sidelines. It'll be curious to watch, but certainly the Giants playing better football than Arizona as we head into this one.
All right, Hub, the New England Patriots coming off a disappointing loss at Buffalo traveled across the country to take on the much-improved Oakland Raiders. Our preview is provided by Mike Petralia.
For the first time this season, the New England Patriots are searching for answers. They blew a 21-0 lead last week in a shocking 34-31 loss to the Bills, their first loss to Buffalo since September 2003. They've also allowed more yards than any other team in the NFL. Now they travel cross-country for a date with the Raiders in Oakland, a team that just put up 34 points in a 34-24 win over the Jets and Rex Ryan's defense. The Raiders rushed for a season-high 234 yards in that win. How will the Patriots handle Darren McFadden, expected to play through a sore groin? Well, Raiders coach Hugh Jackson can't speak highly enough about McFadden, who scored last week on a 70-yard touchdown run.
I think Darren McFadden's one of the best players in football. I've said that, and I'll go on record saying that. He's one of the finest football players and running backs in this league, bar none. And I stand behind that as his head coach and as his coordinator. I mean, he is as good as there is in football.
Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo says the team will have to regroup from last week in Buffalo.
It's always tough to come off a loss, you know, but hopefully we learned a lot from it, and we're looking forward to Oakland Raiders now. Yeah, there were many things in the game, you know, communication, plays not being made, plays being made on both sides of the ball, but, you know, Buffalo just made more. So, you know, it is what it is, and we're moving on. Yeah, it is, and Oakland Raiders have a great team, so it's a great challenge for us. Completely different team than Buffalo, but at the same time, their offense has a lot of weapons, so it's a great challenge for our mental toughness and overall well-being of the team.
The Patriots have scored over 30 points in each of their first three games, but have a struggling receiver in Chad Ochocinco, who dropped a would-be touchdown in the fourth quarter last week. He is a receiver Jackson mentored as receivers coach in Cincinnati from 2004 through 2006.
Chad Johnson is my son. He's kind of colorful, but he is a tremendous young man. I really adore him, but I won't on Sunday.
Receiver Wes Welker set career highs last week with 16 catches and 216 yards and two touchdowns. The Patriots and Raiders have split 29 lifetime meetings, including one tie, in their long rivalry dating back to the AFL. I'm Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
Stat of the week, Wayne. The four picks that Tom Brady threw against Buffalo last week equal the total number of interceptions he threw in 16 games in 2010. I don't think that's going to happen again, and while New England has to get better on defense, Oakland better too if they're going to hold the Patriots in this week.
Ouch, Hub. It's been a bad enough week in Boston. You didn't have to bring that up. Everyone is wondering if the Lions are for real, and perhaps we find out this weekend as they head to Dallas to take on the Cowboys. Russell Scott with the story.
Well, both the Cowboys and the Lions have spent the week trying to fix offensive problems. Sure, Detroit won at Minnesota, but they had to come from behind and win in overtime. Here's Coach Jim Schwartz.
As poorly as we played in the first, we played well in the second. We started getting defensive stops or more active around the quarterback. We can play better. You know, obviously we had taken zero sacks in the first two games and took five here. Not all but the offensive line fault.
The Lions' biggest question could be on their offensive line, particularly at tackle. One was pulled last week. The other had back-to-back penalties and gave up a late sack in Lions territory. This week, that offensive line will face the league's sack leader in Cowboys defensive end DeMarcus Ware. But the Cowboys have their share of offensive problems, too. Four early snaps by center Phil Costa drew the ire of quarterback Tony Romo Monday. Romo's already nursing a broken rib. This week, Costa not only has to concentrate on getting the snap count right, but then he's got to block 300-pound nose tackle Ndamukong Suh, who may be the best in his position. Along with the hair-trigger center, Romo last week had to deal with receivers running the wrong routes and in some cases not knowing where to line up. Still, Romo's hanging with his young team.
We obviously snapped the ball early a bunch of times. We had fumbles. We did a lot of things that aren't accustomed to the way that we do things. Saying all that, I'm proud of the guys to keep coming back, not hang your head. You know, we got some young guys who just love playing the game, and they're going to keep battling and fight to the end.
The Cowboys did find their running game. Felix Jones went over 100 yards for the first time this year, but re-injured his shoulder. He may miss this game. Cowboys secondary still beat up. Now they've got to deal with Calvin Johnson, who's already got 6 touchdown catches for the Lions and is about 6 inches and 40 pounds bigger than either Cowboys cornerback. Not to mention, this will be the best quarterback the Cowboys have seen this year. Matthew Stafford among the league leaders in quarterback rating, and his 9 touchdown throws are tied for the lead in the NFC. Weather's supposed to be great Sunday. Expect the top to be open for this showdown at Cowboys Stadium when the 2-1 Cowboys host the undefeated Detroit Lions. In Dallas, Russell Scott for Pro Football Weekly.
Thank you, Russell. Stay tuned. We've got the headliner next on Pro Football Weekly. The Headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. In Week 4, it is a matchup of AFC stalwarts in Baltimore as the New York Jets pay a visit to the Baltimore Ravens. Bart Pasterna has the story on our Headliner.
Been a rough week for Jets coach Rex Ryan, an embarrassing loss in game one of a 3-game road swing. Not that it's an embarrassment to lose to the Raiders these days. I'm referring to the manner in which Gangrene was whacked by the Silver and Black. Then there was the injury report, putting more than just center Nick Mangold in limbo. From Antonio to Santonio, the Jets may not pass an FAA inspection. Oh, and then there was the pot calling the kettle black moment when famed pigskin prognosticator Joe Namath called out Coach Ryan for what the ex-Jet quarterback perceived as the instilling of overconfidence in players. Ryan barked back, but barely had enough time to get into full growl because the next onslaught is nigh. The Ravens, like the Jets, are 2-1 and considered legit AFC postseason contenders. But they're extra special because of Ryan's and several other Jets' backstory with the franchise. Coachosaurus Rex was a big part of building Baltimore's defensive philosophy back in the day. Can he find his Jets running game in time to present a more balanced attack against Ray Lewis and company? Well, having to throw the ball more isn't what's worrying Ryan.
We've been effective throwing the football. When you look at the numbers, one that's scary is we're 31st in the league in run defense. I'm like, how many teams are there, 1,000? You know, I mean, no, there's 32. That number that's alarming to me.
Because the Ravens got ground game spearheaded by Ray Rice, and they open that up and vice versa with aerobatics. When quarterback Joe Flacco is on, he's on. Even utilizing a newcomer, Torrey Smith, when the situation warrants. Smith had a breakout game versus St. Louis last weekend.
For me, I know I'm not going to play like that every night. I mean, it's still going to be ups and downs. I'm still growing. You know, just because I play well one game, you know, I'm far from a finished product, then I just got to continue to work, continue to get better.
That's Baltimore's attitude on defense as well, where the aforementioned ravenous Mr. Lewis is looking for run defense elevation to continue the Jets' rushing stagnation.
You know, kind of the way we play the run, we make you one-dimensional. Anytime we make you one-dimensional, then we can pretty much get after your quarterback the way that we dictate to get after your quarterback.
Hope Mark Sanchez has a warranty on that nose mask. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pasterna.
You know, Wayne, in fairness to the Jets, most of their problems come from the lack of a running game on their offense, and a lot of that is the injury to all-pro center Nick Mangold. Brandon Moore, right guard, was injured all during training camp, probably not 100%. And with the retirement of Damian Woody, Wayne Hunter is no Damian Woody. They've got to start blocking the run better, controlling the clock, and that's going to help their run defense a lot if they can get David Harris healthy in the middle. For the Ravens, watch Torrey Smith. He was the story last week. We'll see if he is the breakout rookie receiver of the year as they try and go against those two cornerbacks. And, of course, Antonio Cromartie, we don't know if he's going to go either. He's nicked up.
Yeah, the Ravens have injuries in their secondary. It'll be interesting to see if Sanchez can take advantage for the Jets. Jets and Baltimore, our headliner this week. Time now for the Handicapper's Corner, featuring our handicapping expert from the Phoenician in Las Vegas, Chuck Esposito.
Chuck, welcome to the program. And right off the bat, I got to tell you, I'm looking at the Detroit Lions in Dallas. We know what a public team the Dallas Cowboys are. The Detroit Lions have been the Detroit Lions, and yet this game's almost a pick. The Lions just getting a point.
Cowboys are a very small favorite. The Lions are that team right now. They're the it team. They've won 7 in a row dating back to last year. This is a huge game for them because next week, guys, they play on primetime Monday Night Football at home against the Bears. So this could be a little bit of a look-ahead game, but a big test for the Lions on the road in Dallas.
You know, another line that intrigues me is the Indianapolis Colts getting 10 at Tampa. Now, we all know about Peyton Manning, but that defense played really well at home last week, and I don't know if Tampa's won a game by 10 in a long time. So why is that number so high?
It does seem a little bit high. I think the quarterback change with Indy, it looks like Painter's going to get the nod. They played much better at home on that turf. They're outside. The Heat, Tampa's one of those young teams that defensively have played very well. I agree, though. I think that number's a little high. Just the bettors and the public are not backing the Colts without Manning at this stage.
Very quickly, Chuck, I don't mean this to be a trick question, but I'm curious. At Houston, when was the last time the Steelers got 4 points from anybody?
I think you look at the Steelers, and there's a lot of question marks on defense. And you're right. I can't remember them being this big of an underdog against not a prime team. They were an underdog, I think, of 4 points last year to the Patriots in a game, but not this big. So a little bit of surprise there with the Steelers defense has some major question marks, as do their offensive line.
All right, Chuck, thank you much. We'll kick it back to Wayne.
All right, thanks very much, fellas. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen, with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Wayne, certainly we are all thrilled to have the NFL lockout of 2011 in our rearview mirror and a 10-year collective bargaining agreement to protect the health of the game going forward. And I think we all knew when it ended, with the way it ended and the season starting so quickly, that there were going to be some details to work out. And for the most part, we can be completely confident that that will all happen in good time. But some folks are starting to get impatient now with the NFLPA's reluctance to sign on to the blood testing they agreed to in order to check for HGH, human growth hormones, in players. And, you know, I think the players are taking the brunt of the heat on this one. Everybody says it's a good thing, prove you're drug-free, you agreed to it, go ahead. And I don't know that that's all that fair, because I know from talking to union leadership, from talking to players, they're on board with it. They're willing to do it. They want to go forward. But the reality is there are a lot of questions about how this testing works. You've seen it so many times in the bicycling world, you know, and people challenging tests and then finding out that the tests were inaccurate. And then you add to it the fact that these are blood tests. The players are going to be asked to let people stick needles in them, not necessarily at the player's discretion. And I understand why they want to be careful. So, yes, it has to happen. Yes, it should happen. But give the players a chance to at least find out if the test they agree to is going to be one worth taking.
Well said, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Bills, Panthers, and Steelers radio networks. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.